Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everyone, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but before we get to it, we are up for an award. Because of all your support, the Australian Podcast Awards has put us up for Best True Crime Podcast. So all you have to do to vote, and you absolutely should, is to head across to their website. There is a link on our Facebook page over at facebook.com/looseunits. Get voting and maybe we'll win an award. And as I pointed out before, I just want to hear Dad make a speech. On with the show.
When I was a little kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 80s in Sydney, which is generally regarded as the Wild West of law enforcement. A terrifying time to be a cop or a criminal or just to be in Sydney full stop. And I, one day, stumbled upon his case files and they absolutely ruined me. So years later, I approached Dad and we went through his old case files together and it became a book, Loose Units. It's in stores right now, actually. And now we're doing a podcast about it. Loose Units, the podcast, is a weekly true crime podcast where I sit across from my dad, an ex-cop from the 80s, and we dive deep into the seedy underbelly of Sydney's policing. So we're doing this podcast down here in Collingwood every week at Castaway Studios together, and we hope you enjoy it. Last week on Loose Units, the podcast, Dad dropped the bomb that he was actually involved in the Air Wing. I don't know what that is.
Okay. Well, I love planes.
Okay.
And you know that a few weeks ago we discussed me missing a plane.
Yeah.
That was rather sad.
Yep.
Can I tell your listeners just very quickly about my skydiving days?
I guess so. I mean,
really quickly. Look, the thing is that I love jumping out of planes. In fact, there was a time when I'd never, ever, ever landed in a plane. I'd only ever taken off in them.
Really?
Yeah. Because I used to jump out of them.
It's only the first time you went up in a plane, you jumped out of it.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
The first time I...
Well, then the whole thing you just said was bullshit.
No, but I mean, you know... Yeah, point taken.
How often did you embellish like this during the...
No, I'm not embellishing. Okay. Anyway, skydiving, I love planes.
Yep.
My colleague in the book...
Yeah. Which one?
Julian? That we call Julian. He and I... Oh, anyway, look. We used to catch the Red Rattler. For Sydney people, I'll know that as an old, shitty old red train.
Uh-huh.
And we used to catch that out to Bankstown and we used to fly. We used to fly down south. We used to charter planes.
You flew planes?
Well, unofficially, I took off once I've taken off a few times, twin engine.
You illegally flew a plane?
Yep.
Without a license?
Well, I wanted to get a license.
How old were you at this point? Hang on, were you a cop at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to fly down. We used to go scuba diving.
But you can't... You're a cop and you're breaking the law.
I don't know whether that covers aeronautical law.
Don't give me that bullshit of like land, sea and air. Like it's not outside your jurisdiction.
We used to fly down to Jarvis Bay and we used to fly at 500 feet, which is just above the cliffs.
Okay.
And then I remember we were landing one day at Jarvis Bay in a small plane.
Yeah.
And there was an ambulance to our right, sort of at the same speed we were doing, driving on the next to the runway. So we thought we had no wheels.
But you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you do anything else that was shonky or illegal outside?
Yes.
Okay.
Lots of stuff. We used to scuba dive. I think it's in the book. We used to dive.
Yeah.
That's in the book.
But I mean...
We did a lot of illegal scuba diving in illegal locations. Illegal for good reasons.
Oh, okay. Right.
But it was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So there you go, kids. From a former police officer...
if it's illegal, but it's fun, it's fine.
Yeah.
Here's something I quickly wanted to get onto before we do the air wing, the literal opposite of the air wing. I seem to recall as a kid the word abalone being thrown around a lot.
Yes, I've got to be very careful. I don't know whether there's a statute of limitations on illegal abalone diving.
Yeah, if we pull out and this is being played in a courtroom at some point. Yep.
But I love abalone, and Christine and I, your mum and I, when you kids were little, do you remember we used to eat lobster tails and abalone for breakfast?
I have a vague recollection of very expensive seafood.
Incredible.
Yeah, okay.
So there used to be, I've got to be super careful. I'm giving myself a caveat here.
It's caveat.
Whatever. I used to do a lot of diving, a lot of scuba diving. In fact, I was looking at my scuba diving license at the airport yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And I got my diving qualification when I was 17. So I've always loved diving.
Yeah.
And I discovered a place in Sydney where there were commercial quantities of black lead abalone.
Uh-huh.
And I used to, we were limited to it. We had a limited number of, I think it was 20 a day we could take back then.
Uh-huh.
But what I used to do is I'd get people that were just standing around to pretend that I'd assign 20 to each person.
Right.
In case I got pulled over by the fisheries.
How many would you come away with?
Quite a few. I'm not prepared to say.
Go on, say it.
No.
Say it.
More than 100.
There we go.
And they're very valuable.
Five times over the limit.
They're very valuable.
Yeah, I know.
And I used to actually shuck them. That's S-H-U-C-K.
Uh-huh.
And I used to pack them in dry ice and send them to Malaysia.
Oh, so you used to illegally fish abalone and sell it to Malaysians.
I'm not sure I was in the police force at the time.
You absolutely were, because I've seen photos of you and Julian in your scuba suits with tubs of abalone in the background.
Yep.
So...
anyway, I only did it once.
No, fuck you. You did it way more than once.
And it was hard to get... I had to go out at night time and get rid of the shells.
Yeah, okay.
That was a nightmare.
All
anyway.
Right, so, all right.
This has little to do with the air wing.
It doesn't have nothing to do with the air wing. But, okay, so just for the layman, what does the air wing actually... what is the air wing in the police force?
So, well, two things. They've got fixed wing and helicopters. Now, you don't often hear about fixed wing. Fixed wing meaning like a Cessna.
But what is the actual air wing? What does it do?
Oh, it's just a bunch of planes and helicopters.
That do what?
They do surveillance and incredible stuff.
Okay.
Amazing. How many times over Sydney and Melbourne do you look up and there's a police helicopter up there?
I don't really.
Well, you should.
So what I'm saying is, why have an air wing? As a police force, apart from just surveillance, what other functions do they fulfill?
Well, traffic.
Okay.
Although that's dished out to private, authorities. A rescue, sea rescue, cliff rescue.
Okay.
Now, you've got your Westpac helicopters and you've got your all that sort of stuff. But the police helicopters are amazing. They're just fantastic.
Right.
And of course, everyone on board is a police officer. So, you're armed. And if you might want to get somewhere really, really quickly, I've got an amazing air wing story. Holy fuck, it's a ball terror. It's depressing, but it's a good
great
one.
So,
let's get back. So I guess I would imagine a lot of people in the police force in general duties would have just dreamt about getting into the air wing. And it was almost impossible.
Okay.
It was so difficult to get into the air wing that I actually can't even remember how I got in. I must have put a report in, and I was pretty good on paper, to be fair.
Mm.
And I got a response back from, you had to go through the chief pilot.
Uh-huh.
Now, can I just say...
did you have to best him in single combat, Red Baron style, to join?
No.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yep.
But listen, but, just quickly, let's place this in time.
Yep.
So when during your police career was
mid-80s.
Mid-80s.
Yeah, 84, 85.
Had you moved to forensics at this point?
No.
So you're still in general duties?
Yep.
Okay, I don't mind. I just, if we're going to be jumping around, I want to try and help listeners.
You know, 84.
Sure.
Let's call it 84.
Okay.
And the helicopters back then were the Bell Jet Ranger. They were an amazing helicopter. They were just... fuck, so exciting.
You like choppers, do you?
Oh, love them. Well, a mate of mine who's a Qantas captain, he said to me, because he refuses to go up in a helicopter, and he said, I will go up in a helicopter when you show me a bird. Now, this is a visual thing, unfortunately, folks.
Yeah.
When you can show me a bird that's wing goes like that,
spins, I will.
So I'm spinning. I'm gesticulating.
Hang on.
One feather goes around and
what
around.
What a dickhead argument. His argument is that it's not natural for it to be flying
correct.
Around.
They're not supposed to fly.
But planes aren't supposed to
hang
fly.
On. No, no, that's just incorrect.
It isn't.
If you get a ball, like a bit of newspaper, and you just roll it up in a ball and throw it, it'll just fall. That's basically a helicopter.
Yeah, but a plane falls.
A helicopter, if you make a nice little plane out of it and throw it, it can. They have competitions. What about that movie where the kids were throwing the...
You get a rubber band and you actually can... I'm not going to argue with this. Like, what a strange
Paul,
prejudice.
When
to
it
have.
Comes to aerodynamics, you're better off, mate. Just leave it to the experts.
Like you.
Yep.
Okay. So you've engaged in a Dunkirk style dogfight with the head of the air wing, or sent him in your application, or whatever.
Yeah. Was it? Yep.
And he said yes.
Yeah. And they said, "Come on over."
And come on over to where? Geographically?
To now, it was at Mascot, and I'll tell you, we were living on the northern beaches of Sydney, and to get to Mascot at 7 a.m. Mm. was
a nightmare, I guess.
Oh, we had no tunnels going into the Sydney Harbour.
What is it, 2 hours or something?
It was shit.
Yeah.
The traffic was rat shit.
You know what would have helped you get there quicker?
Helicopter.
Fucking helicopter.
Love it. Anyway, Paul, I can read you like a 20-cent paperback. Anyway, so...
Let's hope the book doesn't ever end up that cheap.
No.
Please continue.
So this was actually the first day, because I actually really, really love airports.
Mm-mm-mm.
I love the smell of benzene. Or avgas, whatever.
Sure.
That's not the only thing I like about airports. I'm not addicted to the fumes. But
he thinks he doth protest too
But here's
much.
A little story. Here's a little story. When I lived in Armidale and my parents were school teachers at the time back in the 60s, there was a tiny little town called Uralla, south of Armidale. And we just... Our childhood was simple. I used to go cray-bobbing. Do you know what that is?
No.
Cool. Just look it up. And there was a hurdy-gurdy. Do you know what a hurdy-gurdy is? It's like a thing that spins around in a park. And we used to go... They'd all be banned now for reasons that kids fly off and kill themselves.
Yes.
But back then...
Is that where it's like... It looks like an orb with three doors and a wheel inside, and you get inside...
Not
and you,
quite. It's way before
it's
that.
Open,
it's
though,
primitive.
It?
It's open. You'd, kids would just hang on. In fact, I was on one up north once and some particular people set their wild dog onto me.
Oh, geez.
And while I was spinning around on this hurdy-gurdy, it actually latched onto my back. So it was me holding on and the dog holding onto the skin in my back as we... And the centrifugal force eventually spun the dog away.
Okay. It'll do that.
But that really has nothing to do with the story, because on a Sunday afternoon, Mum and Dad would take us to the airport in Armidale to watch, get ready for this, a Fokker Friendship or... Rarely a DC-3 land and take off.
Right.
And these were exciting times as a young kid. So I just became, not obsessed, but I love planes. So when I had the opportunity to apply to do a trial at the police air wing, which lasted a month, and the trial was that of the position of observer. So you have a senior observer sitting to the left of the pilot, and then the junior observer would be sitting behind the pilot generally.
Yeah.
And I fronted up and they were very, very, it was so full on. These guys were so anal, so fair dinkum. So I kind of felt that maybe this was not going to be such fun. But then I began to realize when you're at an airport working with you know, aircraft in spectacularly dangerous circumstances, you...
You can't dick around, I guess.
No, no. And and we used to do 2-hour sorties.
Yeah.
And you do 2 2-hour flights a day per shift. And
so hang on, at this point had you, was this, so we've already established that you and Julian would fly around on your weekends.
Yeah.
Right. When you got to the air wing, had you already been doing that? Did you know how to fly at this point?
Yeah, I had a bit of a knowledge, but okay. not certainly not helicopters, which are, you know, as I said, you know, they're whole different kettle of fish.
Completely unnatural. Yeah.
Unnatural. And so the head pilot out there was a lovely guy, ex-Vietnam pilot, and he was a hard man. And as an aside, he's now a friend of mine.
Is he?
And he's the loveliest guy.
Is he?
He's such a nice guy.
Do you want to name drop him?
Peter Leslie.
Oh, okay.
And
I don't know him, but
Christine and I, you know, we see him socially sometimes, and he's a really, really fascinating guy. He's a very zen guy.
Great.
He's into meditation, but he flew in the Vietnam War.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So, love to meet him.
Fascinating.
Okay.
Very kind of spiritual sort of a guy, really.
Hmm.
I'd say that look, even the pilots back then, there was a pilot in my class. So they had to go through initial trainings, then they'd go out to the air wing and fly, then they'd come back for secondary training. So they were police officers as well as pilots. And, you know, the sort of work we used to get involved in, I remember we had these amazing, this is probably a bit old school if people are now listening in terms of what's used, the equipment now, but back then this is like cutting edge. We used these amazing, massive binoculars. Now, what you had to do as the observer, before you took off and several minutes before you took off, you had to plug these binoculars into this sort of power socket, because what happened was they had a massive gyroscope inside them. And the gyroscope took a long, long time to really get going. But what it did is
it
that
counteracted the
vibration.
That's amazing.
And they're really big and clunky, and you had these two leather straps, one either side. And when you were flying, and being inside a helicopter is really noisy.
Yeah.
It's the vibration inside the helicopter is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's frenetic. It's intense. You're in a very, very small, almost claustrophobic environment.
They're kind of stupid, aren't they?
No, they're weird.
They're very strange.
And you know, look, you've really got to always be looking where you kind of... And when you go to move from one side of the helicopter to the other, you had to notify, so you'd tap the captain, a pilot, on his shoulder, and he would basically... He needed... These things are so... I mean, I'm talking about the Bell Jet Ranger in the... early 80s.
Sure.
So I imagine things have moved on a lot.
Mm.
But to move, to slide across from one side of the seat, like a bench seat in the back, you if you just sort of tried to stand up and moved over, you'd really upset the equilibrium. Yeah. And if you were close to the ground, you could tilt it and you could crash.
Sure.
So it's really full on. But these binoculars, so you're flying around and then you'd grab the binoculars and they had this amazing sort of a lever and you'd press the lever and it would engage the gyro. So you're looking through these lenses and everything's sort of shuddering and shaking violently, and as you press this button and the gyro engaged, everything became slow motion.
Right.
How's that?
That's very strange.
Surreal. No vibration. And you'd kind of go to move the binoculars and that was like they... almost didn't want to move. They were just wanting to stabilize. Amazing. And we used to do the three shifts. Well, we did the day shift and then you do an afternoon shift, which went till 11. And then it was rarely the air wing basically would shut down because of the noise. But nowadays they've got super quiet helicopters with new technology.
Yeah.
So they're really quiet. But we had all the rescue gear. We had winches to do sea rescues.
Mm.
And when I was in my training, one of the things they wanted to do was to determine whether or not I'd get airsick.
Oh, interesting.
So...
You look so sad about this. Is this how they kind of...
This is how I mean, I'm sort of... There's a lot that happened in between, but...
Yeah.
Basically...
Is this the case that you were going to talk about?
No. It's not that. It's just that sometimes... Because we had to... we were at Mascot, which is right... The police air wing is basically right next to one of the main runways of the international airport.
Mm.
So you can imagine it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's pumping. And we had to get permission, obviously, through air traffic control to take off.
Sure.
So sometimes the pilot would be a bit bored and he'd hover. And then sometimes if they sort of were really bored, they'd start rocking the helicopter from side to side. So you're basically like being in a cradle.
Oh,
and then there's sometimes they do back forward and backwards as well. And I'm in the back. And you had sick bags. And I remember I vomited. Now, when I vomit, I put a lot into it.
Three bags full, sir.
So yes. It's really, really... There's a lot, you know, a lot of...
Exorcist sick, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a bit of projectile and there's a lot of smell and there's a lot of noise and it's the whole combination. And the chief pilot was really, really fucking pissed off and he landed the helicopter.
Right.
And basically just said, look, this is... Because it's disgusting.
It's gross.
And, but, you know, he was doing that, I think, partially because he was bored, but also because he wanted to test me out.
Well, you can't have that going on in the line of duty.
No.
So, okay... You mentioned a specific case in the air wing. I don't think... What I'd like to do is try and confine the Air Wing stuff to just this episode.
Okay.
So I would love for you to just rock out one real ball terror of a story about the Air Wing, if you could, for listeners.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Do you have one in particular?
You told me that you had one.
Yes, I do. I just tried. Well, there are so many.
But do you have one that you think would be particularly intriguing?
Well, there's the one about the boat.
I don't know that one.
Selling the boat.
You can give me as many prompts as you want, but I mean, selling the boat. That's not an Air Wing story.
Well, it kind of is because it involved one of the pilots.
Tell you what, let's finish with that.
You sure?
Yeah.
Look, I'll just tell you a little bit about surveillance.
Okay.
So, and I'm probably not saying too much about surveillance. I've got to be a little bit careful, but I imagine things have changed a lot. Sure. But the police force used to be used, the Air Wing, for high altitude surveillance.
Mm.
Now, what that means, just making sure I don't give too much away, is that if, for example, you had a major drug runner going from, for example, the airport to, let's pick up a suburb at random, say Palm Beach, a very salubrious suburb, the furthest, most northerly tip of Sydney's beaches.
Yep.
And let's say that this particular drug runner, let's say that all the drug squads and all the surveillance and the undercover guys, let's say everyone knew that this big thing was going to go down.
Let's say.
So they are going to instigate a massive surveillance operation and they're going to tail him basically. But what they do is with tailing is that they firstly need to establish the target vehicle. Now, for example, they might take out one of the globes in one of the rear lights, for example.
For example.
Hypothetically, to enable that car to be slightly more able to be seen.
Yes.
But imagine if that person that's being followed, he doesn't know he's being followed, but he spends his entire life imagining he's being followed. So what he does what's called a counter run, where a counter surveillance run.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he's thinking, well, just in case. So what he might do, and this is pre-red light cameras, he may just go through every single red light. Now, if he's being followed, it's going to look pretty obvious to him that another car has gone through that same red light.
Of course.
Okay. Yes. Now, he's got a long trip. Let's say he's got 25K and it's nighttime.
Uh-huh.
He wants to get from, hypothetically, the airport to Palm Beach.
That's a long drive.
And he's got a lot of gear on him. Let's say $10, $20 million worth. So we're playing for big stakes. Jesus. Heroin. So And pure heroin is not actually a massive amount physically.
Right.
Because it's cut down dramatically.
It's like cordial in that respect.
Correct. So, imagine you've got cars in parallel streets. Now, parallel surveillance is really difficult because you're actually surveilling a vehicle that you don't see.
You'd see it occasionally, right?
Maybe they get to see it. But right. Imagine if they had, wow, someone in the sky looking down on this whole operation.
Right.
Being able to guide and... Because if the car that they're allegedly, supposedly following wants to be sneaky, like go into an underground car park, everyone has to back off.
Right.
But that car is going to appear, and with the aid of perhaps, for example, a light missing, it helps up in the sky.
Yes.
And you are flying fairly high, so high, in fact, that you can't be heard.
And you're looking
the guy
through
in the car.
And you're looking through gyroscopic binoculars
Correct.
From a great distance.
Okay. And then sometimes, because you can't plan these particular events, sometimes you have a problem with fuel in the helicopter. Now, this is when it gets really interesting.
Sure.
So what happens is, at nighttime, another helicopter, and this is like the military type flying.
Get off.
Another helicopter will come up and literally be flying right next to you. At nighttime.
Oh my God.
And then you must.
Look, the blades. How would that
look? They're obviously there. All but you can see the guys in the cabin.
Yeah.
They're flying next to you. It's nighttime. Everyone's a bit excited.
Yeah.
And then what happens is you communicate directly with that observer, and he has to prove to you that he has the said vehicle, and he has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he's got the car.
Oh, and then he takes over.
And then you fly away.
Interesting.
And then they take over.
It is a shame that vomit is not a viable fuel source, because then they could just rock you back and forth, zip you around to the side, and you could just barf straight into the fuel tank.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Carry
silly.
You,
completely silly and
carry around
borderline ridiculous.
Yeah, okay.
That's good, Paul.
So the guy, you do the handoff and the guy, the other chopper continues. Do you ever feel a bit miffed when you tag out from a...
Yeah, you do, because you'd love to sort of follow through.
Do you think you get the... I mean, do you get less glory if you...
No. We are never ever. We're never mentioned.
Okay.
Ever. We have nothing... It's never ever to be discussed.
The phrase glory boys was brought up a lot in the book.
Yeah, that's...
Something else?
No, that's detectives.
Yes, but I'm just saying, like, that would imply that there is a certain kind of cop who
that's
wants
different.
To get credit
different.
For it.
Different, thing. Not the Air Wing. Okay. Can I tell you a very great little story? They took me out to a very famous place called Prospect Reservoir in Sydney.
Yep.
And it was cloudy, so there's a massive fog,
sure.
really low.
Yeah.
And the lovely chief pilot, now, probably what I'm about to say, I had a camera with me and I was heavily into photography and I used to take slide photographs. I don't know whether anyone's even going to know what a slide is. And I had my amazing camera with film, if anyone knows what film is. And, okay, this is a bit amazing, actually, and probably contravenes a lot of the laws of aviation.
Sure, well, you've already broken the laws of the sea, so why not do the air?
Okay, so what happened was, and this is too amazing for words, they had what was called a horse collar, I think they called it, and it was sort of at the bottom of this amazing sort of wire... rope that was attached to a winch, and they put this a vest, and it's like a rescue vest,
sure,
and it's
sure.
pretty comfortable,
yeah.
and it would go underneath your arms, and the helicopter was maybe let's say maybe 100 feet above me,
okay,
and I'm on the ground, and they take off,
yeah.
And they actually
wait. So you're in this vest.
I'm in it with my camera. They did this to me.
Get
so
the
I,
really?
Yeah. One morning, a Sunday morning, with a fog. It was so... And I actually... It was so magical. Because what I got to do, they flew me over Prospect Reservoir. And
what?
I was only feet off the water. And I'll never forget. And I was taking photographs.
Yeah.
And there were ducks
that
were literally stepping on the water beneath me, ready to take off. And it was extraordinary.
Oh.
And then I'll never forget, I actually looked up. And at one stage, I couldn't see the helicopter.
Because of the fog?
Yeah. Which is... Of course, these pilots are instrument rated, which means they are allowed to fly. But there was me. Now, imagine if they had have kept going and I had, for example, hit a tree.
Oh, my God.
I'd be fucked, wouldn't I?
Yeah. So, hang on.
So, that was an amazing experience.
Where are the photos?
I I don't know if I've still got them. I know, they're amazing.
People keep the bad photos.
I know.
How do you not have the good ones?
Oh, look, you know.
Dad, just for listeners, Dad's gone into this kind of obsessive minimalism phase, and Dad's area of minimalism, his specialty, is getting rid of prized heirloom photos and childhood possessions, and just purging anything that tethers him to this physical realm, including photos taken as you dangle from a helicopter in a foggy...
Yeah, extraordinary.
Dad, that's amazing.
It was phenomenal. So that was exciting and really lovely of the chief pilot to do that for me. But can I just... I know you want to... Do we have to wrap it up or...
Well, I mean, this next story you tell is a real good one. So
which one?
The one about the boat, right?
Yeah, but that's really... It's not actually about the air wing, is it?
Well...
But it's a great story.
Don't let my quibbling over semantics talk about
it. But it's a really, really nice story because what it portrays is that... We perceive ex-helicopter pilots, ex-Vietnam helicopter pilots, that, yeah. I mean, let's face it, we're talking scary stuff, flying at nighttime in Vietnam, no lights. They could look to the helicopter next door and see the glow coming from their instrument panel. Guys were sitting on their helmet, their tin hats, because only the pilot was protected from ground fire.
Yeah.
So it was pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
And... You know, I got to fly with some of these amazing pilots that were truly incredible. Now, my brother, Mark, he and I were seriously into, you know, abalone diving and, semi-illegal and fishing. And my brother had this amazing boat and we decided he wanted to sell it and I pitched it to one of the pilots in the air wing.
Yes.
And this pilot, ex-Vietnam pilot, he was afraid of nothing. And we met very, very early on the beaches at my place, and it was dark, and we towed this boat. So effectively, we're doing a sales pitch, and I've always loved selling, and I thought this is a good opportunity. I was obviously going to get a small commission. We went up to Pittwater, and we launched this boat, and this was a pretty serious fishing boat.
What describe it?
Well, it was about 15, maybe 16 feet long. It had what was called a center console. It was rigged for serious fishing, and we had some serious motors on the back, and... We took it out, and we went right out through towards Lion Island, which is a notorious spot, particularly for hammerhead sharks.
Yeah,
and everything was going really, really well. We almost had the sail in the bag, and we turned around to come back, and we looked, and there was one of those horrendous southerlies, a massive, one of the great storms rolling up from the north.
Yeah,
and we realized that we had minutes to try and get back into Pittwater, and we started... And the sea became a maelstrom. Now, in terms of the Beaufort scale, if anyone knows, it was the sea turned literally to foam. And there were massive waves. And I had to be at the very front of the boat because when we went over the waves, the wind would literally want to flip the boat over.
Jesus.
And this poor pilot, ex-Vietnam pilot, was sitting down in a semi-fetal position, and rightfully so, because we, the three of us, believed that we were going to sink and at the least drown,
right,
and then possibly be devoured by sharks. And it was horrendous, and it was so scary, and I had to be right up the front of the boat, literally leaning over to counterweight the wind wanting to flip the boat, and it was chaotic, and the sea was black, the skies were black, we were the only boat out there. Needless to say, we eventually, and my brother was bailing. It was so bad. This guy's, and I, at that point in time, realized that I felt that the sail would not go through.
Okay.
Because what we'd done is effectively turned him off boating forever.
But what you did also do as a counterpoint is prove the seaworthiness of the boat.
Correct.
Right.
But that was
which of the
irrelevant.
Two impulses won out in the end?
He didn't buy the boat. He was traumatized, and I think that's... Yeah. Anyway, that's my little story. It's kind of related to the air wing.
Okay. Christ. I just never knew you were in the air wing. How did you finish the air wing? Why did you finish up at the air wing?
Well, what happened was they used to trial really, really keen people. And I did my month there. And yeah, I just, I don't know whether it was the right fit. I kind of felt that some of the observers were a little bit kind of, they were sort of, I don't want to be uncharitable, but it was a certain type of person that enjoyed working there, and it really wasn't my cup of tea. And to be honest with you, it's incredibly, believe it or not, this is going to sound a bit weird, but you know what? Flying around in helicopters all day, every day is actually really boring.
Right. Okay.
And that wasn't for me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, I've got one other little. Do we have time for a tiny?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a great one. Mm. I'll make it really, really quick. We're in the air. We're flying over northern Sydney. Mm. We got a call to a truck that had gone off. Like a truck accident.
Sure.
And it was at a place called Pete's Ridge.
Yep.
Now, back in the day, they had the police rescue. This is before the New South Wales Fire Brigades did the rescue.
Yeah.
It was purely police rescue. And they used to wear their beautiful white overalls, black leather hats. They had these amazing white trucks. They've still got a few of them around.
Mm.
And they had to leave Pennant Hills. Now, from Pennant Hills to this accident at Pete's Ridge, which is near a big way station north of Sydney on the main highway, Pacific Highway, it's a really notorious, dangerous piece of road. You'd gone over the Hawkesbury River. And, you know, for them, for this, and it was obviously a really serious accident, but we didn't have very much information. But VKG contacted us because we used to scan every single channel in Sydney because we were the only helicopter. And they said, look, would we be able to get up to this prang? So I'll never forget, I'm looking down out of my window to the left and I could see this tiny, tiny little white truck, which was police rescue. And I figured that it would take them probably at least half an hour. Imagine that. Imagine having to wait half an hour to be cut out of a vehicle. Because obviously the fact that they've been engaged. So we fly and we are, now what I'm about to say was something out of a Stephen King book.
Yeah.
Something out of The Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. Because we landed. We could see this truck and it had gone off the road.
Yeah.
And was weird, but there were no police officers at the scene. No highway patrol, no general duties. We're in the middle of nowhere on the highway. And we landed behind these trees and we've walked out into the scene and we're wearing these amazing flying suits, which were like dark green. And I went over to the truck. And I looked inside and there were four decapitated bodies in the truck.
Jesus.
So it was Christmas holidays. So there were three men and one of the guys had his son on school holidays. And the load, so the truck went down into the culvert, which is like a sort of like a, how would you describe it? Like a dip to the left of the road.
Yeah.
And then the load of steel came through the cabin. So cut four heads off. And all of the heads were, including the head of a young boy, were all at their feet. So that was pretty depressing.
Fuck.
And so I just sort of got down and realized that, you know, there's not a lot could be done. And so that's a pretty bad part of the story. But the weird part of the story, which I found quite fascinating and surreal, as if that whole scene's not bizarre, because it was weird being the only police there.
Weird.
But eventually all these police start rocking up. Firstly, the highway patrol, because they've got the pursuit cars.
Yep.
You know, they don't do a lot, but they just kind of hang around,
sure.
Maybe do a bit of traffic control. And I'll never forget this police officer came up to me and said, "Who the fuck are you?" They're his exact words. And I said, "Oh, where were the air wing?" And he went, "Where's your fucking helicopter, mate?" And I just walked away. The guy was a bit of a whatever. The great part of this story is that we were behind the trees.
Yes.
And then we started to go tick, 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 tick. And then we looked down to the astonishment of that guy and others. They see this helicopter just basically come out. Oh, it was surreal.
Well, it'd be like rocking up to a crime scene and seeing some guys in scuba suits.
Correct.
And you'd be like, what are you
Where's
doing
Where's the water?
Here? Exactly.
Exactly. It was great. And then we just sort of flew away. We had no paperwork. We were the first on the scene.
Yep.
And then we just resumed patrol. Now, I guess going back to that letter or that note from a few weeks ago from that girl about the trauma, I don't recall any trauma. You just, you know, I think that's the thing about being professional. You're engaged.
Yeah.
You know, you're working. You kind of expect to see some bad shit.
Yeah. I think of it as there's an episode of The Simpsons where Monty Burns has like 1,000 different ailments and the guy gives him this visual metaphor. He gets all these little toys and tries to cram them through a doorway at once. And he's like, there's so many of them trying to get through that they all get stuck and none of them can get through. It's like if one traumatic thing happens to me, a person who has a very privileged life without trauma, it stands out because it's like a black dot on a white canvas. Whereas with you, it's just this grid of dots. It's like, which one are you going to pick? It's so busy. There's so much going on that none of it really gets a chance to filter through. Mm. That was an absolutely packed episode, Dad. Thank you. And thank you so much for listening to Loose Units again. We've got time for a very, very quick question from the mailbag. Isabella asks, I so hope there is an audiobook coming out. I'll answer that one. There is an audiobook coming out. I'm recording it around about now, actually. So the audiobook will be out very, very soon. My question, why do you hate possums?
Well, that's a... I love possums.
This is a callback to episode one or two, I think.
Now, possums have played a fairly prominent role in my life because Christine and I, we used to go to North Head to just sort of sit in the car and chill.
Yeah.
And there was a crowd. I saw this crowd in my rear vision mirror. This is only a few months ago.
Mm.
And there was a possum that had gone into a big garbage bin and it had decided to sleep the night. But what happened was it got really, really hot and it became, you know, fatigued and stressed and it was perspiring profusely, as was I when I saw it. And we had to try and get the possum out of the bin.
Right.
And weirdly, we called wires, but then I thought about it later and thought, you know, I could have just tipped the bin over, but I didn't. And then my father used to feed possums at their house on the northern beaches of Sydney, and then he fed them bananas for many, many years. So there was an actual... there were multiple families of possums, and then Dad got the shits with the possums, and then he decided to set up traps. So we went out and bought traps, and then he'd catch them in the possum trap, and then he'd get me to take them to another suburb. So I used to drive them down to Cromer and let them go in the Cromer golf course.
Which is, of course, an obstacle to be negotiated by any... willing golfer. I guess the answer to that question, Isabella, is he doesn't hate possums
anymore. I love possums.
Loves them. Great. Yep. All right. That was a weird way to finish a very violent episode. Thank you for listening to another week's episode of Loose Units, the podcast. If you haven't already, and I know you probably have, but if you haven't, run to a bookshop and grab a copy of Loose Units. If they don't have it, or tell them to order it in. They can absolutely do that. That is within their remit as a purveyor of fine books. Get across to facebook.com/looseunits and join in all the fun. Head across to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. And we will see you next week for more true crime straight from the mouth of my ex-cop dad. That sounded weird.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.